Yo, yo, yo. Welcome to Two Dudes in a Mic Podcast, episode 122 with Tori and Max.
Yo.
So I'm back. I've recovered from the sickness or the cold to an extent, but I'm still coughing. So that's what you'll be hearing from time to time. And it's arguably the worst cold symptom to be having, because if you cough in public, people might think you have corona. But at least my voice is back. Last week, it was just not fun. I mean, I recovered from my sore throat by the time we were about to record, but I was just kind of drained on energy. Anyway, enough of that. Let's discuss what we have today. The first story is a follow-up to our professor in kindness. She made an apology because I believe a new season of her show premiered, and she started with a monologue, you know, doing the basic apology. I take responsibility. Things will be different. We're starting a new chapter. She even said we've made the necessary changes. And a lot of employees and former employees are still not buying it. According to what they've been telling BuzzFeed News, they didn't really like the joke that she made, like at the beginning when she was like, "How is everybody's summer? Good? Yeah, mine was great. Super terrific." That eerily sounds like the beginning of Louis C.K.'s stand-up when he came back, because he was like, "So, how have your guys' year have been?" And it sounds eerily similar, but whatever. She also said, "Let me give you some advice out there. If anybody's thinking of changing their title or giving yourself a nickname, do not go with the be kind lady. Don't do it." And this was exactly what I said before. You'll notice how you don't see people like Keanu Reeves saying outright, "I am nice. I am kind." Anyway, one former employee stated, "Not only did Ellen turn my trauma, turn our traumas into a joke, she somehow managed to make this about herself. When she said, 'Oh, my summer was great, and that was supposed to be funny,' I thought, 'It's funny that you had a rough summer,' because everyone was calling out all of the allegations of your toxic work environment, and now you're the one suffering." That was another statement from another former employee. A current employee told BuzzFeed News they've been frustrated with minimal communication from their superiors about the direction and vision for the new season, and that all of their duties were put on hold until DeGeneres delivered her monologue. Now that's interesting, because in her monologue, I'm pretty sure she mentioned we've made the necessary changes. The employee said they're relieved to be able to move forward with work now that the premiere aired, but that, quote, "It's all tactical." "It's always tactical," the employee said. "The average person will listen to it and make their own choices. But what people don't always take into account is that info is power. And she's sharing it now because it's for premiere week and it's to get viewers back. And that just feels the opposite of what this message is about." And that was the first thing I noticed about this apology, is that the timing of it just happens in front of an audience. Now, I understood that she apologized before, quote, apologized, because it was her saying, "I take responsibility," and then proceeding to blame others. But,
yeah,
I mean, I guess it's reasonable to expect someone to apologize on their opening monologue. But what's interesting here is we're getting testimony, allegedly, that there hasn't been much communication about what those changes have been made around the show production, and yet Ellen is out here telling people things have already been set forward to change and that this is a new chapter. Quote, "It's kind of amazing that this is being discussed on her show, to actually go from an environment where nothing is said and everyone keeps their head down to now when it's the topic of her first show back is pretty amazing. Whether or not I believe in this message that she is saying is another issue," unquote. Yeah, man, I mean, that's a toxic workplace right there. When people are intimidated and constantly on edge because of their bosses due to intimidation, I mean, that has to be stressful to drive there every day, every work day, that is. And at the end of the day, when it comes to leadership, respect will always trump intimidation.
Yep.
Quote, "I don't feel sorry that she's in a shitload of trouble because she branded herself the be kind person," another former employee said. "She's acting like it was something she said in passing that just stuck with her. It's not something that stuck with her. It's not an accident. She went forward with this idea and this marketing strategy that was not true behind the scenes. There's nothing wrong with being the be kind lady if you're actually true to your word." And then another former employee was saying how they wish that Warner Brothers Media reached out to the former employees to ask, you know, to try to console them or at least apologize instead of making an internal investigation, just be like, okay, we're done. And I would hope that they're still reaching out to former employees if they're conducting an investigation. Anyway, these are all from people who currently and formerly worked for her. And I believe Demi Lovato said that, like on social media, "See, this is like the real Ellen." Bitch, how do you know?
Again, like, as we've said before, it is Ellen's job to be nice around the people who bring audiences to watch her show. Like, she will be a different person around celebrities than she is around her workers.
Yeah. As I believe Albert Einstein said, like, you should always treat respect to everyone, even, you know, whether it's a president of a university or a janitor, they should still get the same level of respect.
Yep.
Again, if there's anything to learn from this, is to never brand yourself as a nice person, even if you genuinely are a nice person. Let's move on. Is there anything else we have about this?
No, it just, you know, the narcissism involved in this decision makes sense to me. You know, I can't say I'm surprised. It's just, I'm a little surprised that they were this callous, but narcissist's gonna narcissist. So if she keeps digging her grave, so be it.
Yeah, fuck her, honestly. As you can tell, I have a personal bias against Ellen. I just hate anybody who tries to project themselves as something they're not on that scale. Anyway, let's discuss Facebook. There was a group, basically a environmental activism group, that was involved with protests, particularly against this investment firm that was backing a coastal gas link pipeline. So last year in May, they were involved in a protest that was targeting that particular investment firm.
Mm-hmm.
Take notes, Instagram activists. And fast forward more than a year later, they were planning this basically virtual protest, which, to be honest with you, I'm not sure how this works or how virtual protests works in general, unless if you're talking about hacktivism. Anyway, they've used Facebook groups or whatever and Messenger to coordinate these protests or whatever. And they were planning on having a virtual protest against this same investment firm. But the day before it happened, all of the accounts of this group were suspended. And then the day after, well, maybe not exactly the day after, but shortly after the, you know, supposed protest was supposed to happen, they just decided to suddenly remove the suspensions for most of the accounts. There's still some that are banned to this day. And Facebook basically came out saying, oh, it was a mistake with our systems, bro.
Of course.
This is why I just hate censorship. I mean, it comes both ways, and it's pretty clear that Facebook is protecting the interests of corporations who wants to make profit no matter the costs to the environment. So in other words, this is about money. And Facebook basically just shut down a protest, hence making them what I would call tyrannical. And I really wish there was more antitrust laws. I really think there needs to be legislation for this kind of shit, because to me, this is the virtual equivalent of a city government imposing a curfew to prevent protesting a Confederate statue. And obviously this is just plain wrong, and the censorship that comes from big tech is centered around the motives of money. Yes, there could be, you know, ideological biases. I don't doubt that. However, I think at the end of the day, this is about money. Oh, this YouTuber is going to piss off advertisers? Well, let's just ban him on his first strike. Oh, these people are protesting a group of corporations that were being paid by? Well, let's just shut down that protest. And because of COVID, you know, there's still a lot of people protesting in real life, but now there's also virtual protests. Again, I don't know how that works. And of course, the danger of that is when big tech has control of these cyber spaces, they now have the power to just do shit like this unchecked as well. At least like in real life, right? With police and you see videos, yeah, there's a good chance they're not going to be held accountable, sadly, but at least like it's more transparent in that you can capture it on video. With this is more likely to go under the radar. As far as I know, the most mainstream news organization that has published this story is The Guardian. I don't think this is a very popular story in the media circle in general, and it does not surprise me. Typically, what I've noticed is that censorship against righties or right-leaning people or extremists tend to be more popular on the news, but then when it comes to left-wing censorship, it tends to go under the radar more. I don't really know why that is, and I don't think that should be the case. I think this story should be blown up. I think it should receive the same amount of attention that the QAnon story got, the other dozens of stories we've discussed, because 90% of the censorship stories that we have brought into light on here have been already popular in the first place, but it's this story, stories like these, the story that Max brought up a month or two ago about Facebook censoring climate scientists again. I mean, that wasn't very popular either. Yes, it was published by like a couple reputable news sources, but it wasn't that popular. So I think that's very odd. The media will be like, okay, let's make right-wing censorship popular, but let's cut the line at lefty climate activism censorship. We'll just keep our mouths shut for that. And I'm kind of puzzled as to why. But I guess maybe because the corporations, the same corporations, are donating to the corporations that own those major news networks. But that's just a guess.
That's definitely possible. I would also say it might be because typically when an alt-right person gets banned, they have a very passionate, vocal viewer base that usually makes it much more of a fuss than people who are involved in like environmental groups like this.
And that's my frustration with people our age.
Yeah.
And regarding activism, particularly around environmental causes, is that people, again, want to make this a individualistic issue with no specific goals. This is what at least I've noticed. They don't target specific investment firms or corporations like what these people are doing. And that to me is just kind of unproductive.
Yeah.
And this is what they want you to think. This is what these corporations and these investment firms, that's what they want you to think. They want you to focus on yourself and how you can improve the environment, because they don't want you to focus on them. But yet, I don't think there's that many people that realize that. Yes, everybody knows that corporations are the driving factor behind this type of shit, but yet they want to be an activist for climate change or whatever, and yet they somehow, for whatever reason, will focus the magnifying glass on themselves and their buddies instead of the corporations that are causing, 70% of those emissions or some shit?
Yeah, essentially. Yeah, they want to deflect all the blame. And it's worked, unfortunately, well. So organizations like this, the organizations like the Extinction Rebellion that happened in London around this time last year, it was real great passion, but absolutely no fucking direction.
That seems to be a common theme in protests in general regarding any type of cause or topic, is a lack of specific goals. Now, one could argue that they are raising awareness to a theme or movement that has specific goals. However, in this age of information flow, I don't think that is good enough. For example, everybody knows about BLM. Everybody knows about breast cancer. But what are your particular specific policy proposals and goals attached to movements and causes? And I think that's lacking with protests in general.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've kind of shit on a lot of protests in general. Not because they're doing it, but because they're doing it so ineffectively.
Yeah. No, I want more, you have to get in people's faces and you have to cause unrest, because that's what they're for. That's what's going to make the people in power pay attention.
Yeah, and by the way, I'm not saying loot or damage property. I'm saying don't fucking go to the city government for approval.
Yeah, I'm saying don't go to the city government for approval, and don't loot or damage property unless it's corporate property.
Yeah, for real. Anyway, let's move on to what you have.
Indeed, indeed. So, first we're going to go down to Florida, as all things end up. But for a more positive thing this time around, Michael Bloomberg has apparently raised more than $16 million in an effort to help convicted felons in Florida register to vote. He paid off the monetary applications for 32,000 felons, meaning that they will now be able to vote under Florida in Florida under Florida laws. Because once you get convicted of crime, once you become a felon, you lose the right to vote. And so now that he's helping them get out of that, they're actually going to be able to vote. This is fantastic. I'm going to link into some more in a second. Quote, the right to vote is fundamental to our democracy, and no American should be denied that right. As Bloomberg's spokesperson told the news outlet, working together with the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition, we are determined to end disenfranchisement and the discrimination that has always driven it. Florida passed a law in 2018 reinstating voting rights for felons that dictated they could register only if they pay all the fines, fees, and restitution, sometimes totaling more than $1,000 owed to the government. So, you know, this isn't going to, like, stop a murderer from being able to... this isn't going to let a murderer vote. This is going to let people who are, you know, smaller things, smaller bullshit things, now they will be able to vote. This is really good. This is fighting against voter suppression, which is a huge issue this year. It's just kind of neat, I think. But then it also ties into something that a lot of people don't talk about or realize, that the laws that were put in place to make it so that convicted felons cannot vote were part of, like, the Jim Crow wave of laws, part of that whole voter suppression thing. The same way that slavery is still legal in the Constitution as long as you've been convicted of crime. Once black people got the right to vote, they were like, oh, well, how do we stop this then? Make them so that they can't vote if they've been convicted of a crime. And then they get convicted of so many more ridiculous petty crimes. So this is just good job, Bloomberg. I don't say that often, but good job, Bloomberg. As long as he didn't give them the money and it's just like, all right, now write me in on the ballot.
Yeah, I've never liked the concepts of, yeah, you've been convicted, so therefore you can't vote, like, for the rest of the time you live in this country. Because once you've served your time, you should be able to vote. I don't think you should lose that right. To me, and that's interesting that you brought up the history of that, because I actually didn't know that, but, you know, that makes a lot of sense now that you have mentioned it. Yeah, this is good.
Yeah, that was just a short little thing. Now, moving over to England, another thing from The Guardian, good old Guardian. Some schools in England have been told to not use material from anti-capitalist groups. Ideas categorized as, quote, extreme political stance, equivalent to endorsing illegal action. The government has ordered schools in England to not use resources from organizations which have expressed a desire to end capitalism. The Department for Education guidance issued on Thursday for school leaders and teachers involved in setting the relationship, sex, and health curriculum categorized anti-capitalism as an extreme political stance and equated it with opposition to freedom of speech, anti-Semitism, and endorsement of illegal activity. You know, good old countering freedom of speech by making sure that you can't talk about things in certain classrooms. Big, like, galaxy brain level moves here, am I right? The former Shadow Chancellor, John McDonnell, said the measure is effectively outlawed in reference in schools to key events in British history, and that it symbolized growing authoritarianism with the governing Conservative Party. That is true. The guidance part of lengthy guidelines for implementing the statutory curriculum said, quote, schools should not, under any circumstances, use resources produced by organizations that take extreme political stances on matters. This is the case even if the material itself is not extreme, as the use of it could imply endorsement or support of the organization. It listed examples of what were described as quote, extreme political stances, such as a publicly stated desire to abolish or overthrow democracy, capitalism, or to end free and fair elections. Two out of those things are good. Not support. One of those things is more debatable. Freedom of speech, the use of racist, including anti-Semitic language, the endorsement of illegal activity, and the failure to condemn illegal activities done in support for their cause. McDonald said, on this basis, it will be illegal to refer to large tracts of British history and politics, including the history of British socialism, the Labour Party, and trade unionism, all of which have at different times advocated the abolition of capitalism. England is a socialist country. It has aspects of socialism in it, you know, the NHS, the rail system up until a while ago. Lots and lots of history of strong trade unions and things like that have been slowly getting dismantled by the Conservative Party for the last 100 years. And this is just another step in that. This is another step in the culture war and its drift towards extreme conservatism, authoritarianism, is gaining pace and should worry anyone who believes that democracy requires freedom of speech and an educated populace. Economist and former Greek finance minister Yanis Varoufakis. Yanis Varoufakis said the guidance showed how easy it is to lose a country, to slip surreptitiously into totalitarianism. He added, imagine an educational system into their curriculum teaching resources dedicated to the writings of British writers like William Morris, Iris Murdoch, and Thomas Paine, even. Well, you don't have to. Boris Johnson's government has just instructed schools to do exactly that. This Seymour QC suggested that the government has on occasion not complied with the guidance itself after it admitted the new Brexit bill would break international law, quote, endorsement of illegal activity, and continued selling arms to Saudi Arabia for use in Yemen, following a court ruling that it was unlawful. Tariq Ali, the writer and activist, said, although the new guidance was a sign of moral and political bankruptcy, the advent of the internet meant such measures were ultimately futile. Leaving aside the stupidity, these things don't work. People will read what they want to read, trying to enhance a version of the prevent strategy, which is already in place, is quite scandalous and shocking. If you put things on a banned list, lots of young people can access them via the internet and read them. Banning them from schools will not work at all, aside from the fact that it's a sign of moral and political bankruptcy. He added, how could young and old people not read anti-capitalist analysis after 2008, and now with the virus going on and recessions looming all over the Western world? This was a concerning development in the government. What the guy said is right. It's going to be hard to actually enforce any of this with the internet. But the fact that they're not allowing it to be taught in classrooms is weird, because, again, you could argue that a lot of things. The British Civil War and Revolution and Oliver Cromwell and all that stuff could be described as endorsing illegal activity, but that's part of the country's history. Like, it's ridiculous and blatant authoritarianism.
Yeah, isn't this fighting authoritarianism with authoritarianism?
Yeah, supposedly. It's trying to fight what they see as authoritarianism, what they're trying to claim as authoritarianism and evil by, you know, stopping people from reading books, because that always works.
Again, with censorship, it's people suppressing what they think is evil until they slowly devolve into the evil that they once sought to destroy, which is ironic.
I don't think that these people ever necessarily sought to destroy it. I'm pretty sure that the people who made this decision are pretty okay with an authoritarian government as long as they're the authoritarians.
It's a stepping stone.
Yeah.
You have to be able to teach uncomfortable ideas in school. You have to make people aware of the evil so they shall not fall into that evil.
Yeah. If you don't teach people about fascism, people are going to start being fascist. If you don't teach people about inflation, they're going to think it's a good idea to just print money to prevent the country from falling into a into a recession. Yeah.
Learn your history or be doomed to repeat it.
Yeah. Anyway. That's basically what I have to say about this. Anything else on that?
No.
All right. That's pretty much what I had for the week. There's, of course, a bunch of other things going on. Trump's tax returns came out yesterday, and apparently he only paid $750, which is, like, that's about how much I pay in rent per month.
$750?
Yeah.
Nice. Same here. With utilities and shit.
Yeah, no, I don't have those. London. But, yeah, like, $750 for a self-proclaimed billionaire. And there's a bunch of other things. The Supreme Court nominee came out this weekend, and she's basically a fucking cultist who wants to end women's rights. You know, a bunch of stuff in the world isn't going great right now, but I don't want to focus on those, because if I do, I will spiral.
Yeah, I've had to tune out of serious political news for the past 2 months. It's not good to always be paying attention to that stuff.
Yeah, no. The night that I found out Ruth Bader Ginsburg died, I was a little fucked up. I was a little fucked up already, and then I found out that she died, and that was not in a good headspace, and I spiraled. That was just very, very bad. So after that, you know, I'm just trying to, you know, keep aware, but then also not dwell, because dwelling is not healthy.
Is there anything else you want to discuss before we move on to random quarantine picks?
That is all I got, so I suppose I should say RQP.
I'm going to recommend a song. If you like rock songs that make you nostalgic from the late 90s to mid 2000s, I recommend Sucked Out by Superdrag. I think you'd like it personally.
I don't think I've heard it. I'll listen to it after I'm done with this.
All right, I'll send you a link. What do you have?
I am going to choose for this week the Mega Man Zero and ZX collection on the Switch. It's a video game. It's the Mega Man Zero and ZX games from the Game Boy Advance and DS. I've been playing it this past week because I played those games on my DS growing up, and they're some of the best fucking platformers ever made. They're so good. The story in the Mega Man Zero games is so much better than it has any right to be. It's like an actually engaging story, if you look at it. And the gameplay is just so good. It's challenging, but it's intense. And if you get good at it, you feel like a fucking badass. It's so fun, yeah.
What platform again?
This one's on the, I think it's on the Switch. It's on PC. It might be on PS4 and Xbox too.
Nice. Let's move on to obscure and random questions.
Okay. I don't know what you have prepared, but I'm going to do what I said I would do last week and ask you, what is the minimum... No?
Obscure random questions. That's your cue.
Questions.
That's your cue.
Oh! Or cue.
Okay, what were you saying?
I'm going to ask you the minimum it would take for you to want to actively saw someone's head off. Like, what's the least someone would have to do to you to make you seriously, like, want and start to attempt to saw their head off? Like, to the point where you're in the shop looking for saws.
One night, I was studying at the library at the old school I went to. I was walking back to my house to my place off campus, I lived on a busy street. In hindsight, it was not a good idea to walk in the sidewalk of a busy street just because I would have to cross it a lot, and a lot of people make turns, and it is a pretty, like a fast traffic street, so people are fast to turn. I was walking this night, and it was, I believe, a pickup truck. I was crossing the sidewalk. This pickup truck was in a rush to get to make the right turn. And as I was three quarters away from being out of the way, as I was walking, it was slowly inching towards my direction. Mm. And to kind of piss him off, which I guess this was partially on me, I walked slower. But this fucking hick blew his fucking horn. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that, but whatever. He blew his horn at me. And because it's a bigger car, the noise of someone honking is much louder.
Yeah.
And he blared it. It wasn't a beep beep, it was a beep. And I was already out by that time. I was only like three steps away from being out of his way, and then he drove away like fast, and I flipped him off. I think I yelled "fuck you" to him. Mm-hmm. But my ear was ringing for 20 minutes at least, my left ear, that was. And I honestly had like homicidal induced rage induced thoughts about whoever was behind the wheel.
Yeah.
And in that moment, I probably would have sawed his head off if we were in an isolated space. Because fuck that guy. What was nice. I being a jackass a little bit? Yeah. But you gotta yield, and you also shouldn't be fucking being on my toes as I'm walking to get out of your way. You shouldn't be veering your fucking vehicle close to me and inching closer. Just wait. Forget about the people behind you. Fuck them. Yeah, I probably would have murdered him in that moment. I mean, I was so pissed off at that motherfucker. I didn't even get a good look at him, so like my thoughts of killing him were kind of like visually limited.
Mm-hmm. But you know, a good sawing would have been nice in that moment.
Oh yes. Oh yes. And even then, if I still like, if he magically summoned into my apartment, I would probably still beat him with a bat or give him a nice head whack. I could potentially kill him, but win-win, I fucking guess. Anyway, is there any other questions you got?
That is all I have. I just thought that was a good one, and I wanted to hear your take on it. I think that's similar to what I said. I said if I was, like, biking and someone tried to run me off the road, or, like, yeah, some asshole driver like that pulling something like that, that would probably push me to the point where, yeah, I could saw that man's head off.
I like how both of our answers involve vehicles.
Of course they do. Because driving is simultaneously one of the most relaxing and rage-inducing things possible.
Well, we've also lived in Nova for some time, so that probably has contributed to our internal vehicular homicidal rage.
Yeah.
Speaking of bikes, I guess a second answer I would have to that is, well, I've told this story once. One time I was driving to pick someone up. It was around this loop around the campus and kind of like a, you know, where people get dropped off or picked up, whatever. And there was these bikers that were just like, they had their bikes because it's one way, right? And so bikers were facing the wrong way. And they were not just bikers. They were also hippies. They didn't wear like the whole professional gear thing with that helmet. No, they were just a bunch of fuckers with long hair and beards that weren't even fully grown out, so they just had gross stubbles on their fucking stupid faces. And at that time, when I drove, like, and I had to squeeze my car, like, between another car that was parked and these two jackasses, I cannot tell you how tempted I was to fucking put, like, wheel myself to the left to fucking sort of hit them. Like, I was just so pissed that they did that. But I think in hindsight, it would have been better to just kind of drive fast towards them while honking to scare the fuck out of them. But I don't know. That would have been con video anyway. But yeah, vehicles, man. Jesus.
Yeah.
I guess one question that just came into my mind. This was a topic of debate between myself and other friends a couple of nights ago. Is it gross to do this? Is it gross to be taking a number two and texting someone at the same time?
Say that one more time.
Okay, is it disgusting for someone to be on the toilet taking a number two while at the same time texting another person?
No.
Thank you.
What the fuck else are you going to be doing in that time?
Yeah. I was talking to my friend and he was like, man, those people are like, he just randomly brought it up. He was like, man, those people that do that are so gross. It's so unsanitary. I was like, yeah, fuck those people. Ha 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 ha. He was like, y'all are nasty. I'm like, what the fuck do you mean? He said it was like unsanitary. I'm like, dog, before there were phones, there were newspapers. Don't you think that's like kind of worse? He was like, no, because with the mobile device, you're carrying that with you all the time. So it's not just the texting part, but it's like being on your phone while shitting. I don't think that's gross because once I'm done or in between the two phases, I put my phone down. I'm not looking at Facebook as I'm wiping my ass, bro. Like, what? No.
I keep that separate. But beforehand, you know, when I'm using my phone, my hands are no more dirty than, I don't know, any of my clothes or my shoes in the room or something.
Yeah, I mean, what else am I supposed to do? Be alone with my thoughts?
Absolutely not. I refuse to ever do that.
Disconnection anxiety. It's a bitch. Anyway, I guess that makes two questions. Okay. Unless if you want to do another one.
I could do a third if you have one.
Okay. What meal is your favorite? Breakfast, lunch, or dinner?
You know, in high school, I would have said dinner. These days, lunch.
Why?
In high school, you know, we'd only have fucking half hour for lunch. And so just fucking scarf down a sandwich and a banana or some shit like that. These days, I get a full hour for lunch break. I'm in the middle of London where there is food everywhere. I can either go cheap or I can go a little bit more high end. I can get small. I can get big. I can get any type of food that I want. I have a policy where if I have to like actively enjoy one meal a day. Which means, and I do this to save money, because if I go all out on all my meals, then I'm just going to be spending ridiculous amounts of money on food. But I usually don't eat breakfast. But if I do, it'll be something very, very light. Just something to get me moving at the beginning of the day. And then dinner, for the most part, it's changing this term, because I'm going to start to cook more. But last year, I would get home late, and I would be fucking exhausted because of the commute and my long-ass days. And I wouldn't want to cook anything that difficult, so I'd just slap together a ham and cheese sandwich or something like that. But lunch, I would go for it. There was this whole court of food stalls right near my school that I would just sample from. I would, like, got something from every single one of them, all over the world, different types of food. There was Korean, there was Thai, there was the best fucking Thai curry in the world, there was Korean, there was Thai, there was Indian, there was Italian, there was German, there was Peruvian, there was British, whatever. There was vegan, there was seafood, there was meat, there was fried chicken. Oh, it was fantastic. I would just get something different from there every single day. So yeah, lunch became a real feast for me. And it still is.
Yeah, the problem with dinner in general is that you're tired and you've got to make it yourself if you don't get takeout. What's odd here in Wisconsin, at least where I live in particular, there is a huge imbalance between the amount of people who go get takeout during lunchtime and dinner time. Everybody, and I mean everybody, gets takeout at dinner.
Huh.
Chipotle, I mean, the lines are through the door sometimes. Wow. Like, yeah, evenings. But yeah, in Northern Virginia or just anywhere else I've been, like, there's been like a healthy balance between lunch and dinner goers for takeout food. Yeah, typically lunch was less populated generally, but there was still a decent amount. But it's not like during the evening it was plagued with people all the time. But that seems to be a thing here. Anyway, something, just a cultural difference I've noticed. I guess I would say dinner, because lately I've been only eating dinner. I've been skipping breakfast and lunch.
Interesting.
For same reasons you've mentioned about, you know, saving money, but
yeah,
it also makes you suffer a little, and that's something I enjoy to an extent. Not because I'm a masochist, of course, even though I have the voice of someone who would be a masochist, but it makes you appreciate what you have. For example, if I'm really hungry, I acknowledge the fact that I have the opportunity to eat right now. And on top of that, whenever I eat dinner nowadays, it actually tastes a lot better. Just because, well, I'm super hungry when I eat. The only challenge of this, of course, aside from the hunger part, is that I have to make sure, to an extent, that the meals I'm eating for dinner, since it's one meal a day, is full of adequate nutrients.
Yeah.
But I don't recommend it for everyone, but it is something I've been trying out. And look, man, you gotta save the money at some point. And I like enacting disciplines in my life. Except for waking up at the same time every day. Fuck that.
That's a step too far.
Exactly. I could deal with the eating part in terms of the timing, but not with sleep. Too far. Too far. Anywho, is there anything else we have to bring up or discuss?
I think that's all I got.
Okay. Something I've noticed with the stats of this podcast in terms of downloads is that some of y'all motherfuckers download this podcast 4 days after it comes out, which is fine. You can listen to it whenever you want. I'm not saying you have to listen to it right when it fucking releases. But my point is that if you're interested in listening to them like right when they release, just subscribe with whatever app you're using. And I don't know the refresh rates for the RSS feeds on every app, but the point is it will notify you sooner of when new episodes of this release, and you'll get them in a timely manner. And that to me is kind of more important nowadays, just because Max and I, well, we're on a 6-hour time difference, soon to be 7 for a little bit. So that means, in other words, don't be surprised if it's just Max randomly one episode, or just me, or the episode is uploaded late on Thursdays, because typically I try to put these up Wednesday afternoons. And that, so that will be a semi-regular occurrence. Sometimes it might happen because of a miscommunication, not because necessarily one of us can't do it. So I'm just saying, brace for the lack of stability with both the format and the upload schedule. I wish it was more stable and consistent, but when it comes to scheduling, even between two people, 6 hours difference is a real bitch, and it will be even harder with a 7 hour. But thank God that will only last for a limited amount of time anyway. So that's something to be aware about. Again, you don't have to, if you don't mind, like, just downloading it later in the week or the weekend, that's fine. I'm just saying, if you are interested in being notified right on the same day it comes out, then just subscribe on whatever fucking app you're using. Again, optional, but recommended.
Fucking do it.
Or else.
Fucking do it.
We'll send Max's hair to your door if you don't fucking do it.
Actually, I have it. I have it in a bag in my room right now. I asked him to keep it so I could donate it to some hair charity, and I still need to do that. So.
Well, it looks like we're going to have to make changes about where that hair's going, buddy. These fuckers don't step it up. No, I'm just playing. It doesn't really fucking matter. Anyway, that's all we have. Peace, motherfuckers.